Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. My next guest decided to start her career over for a second time and then just recently got diagnosed with ADHD and ASD. She's also an artist, so sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage and let's learn more about her. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Joe Phillips. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you very much for having
Not a
me.
problem. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
So I'm an illustrator and designer, and I am living in Bushey in Hertfordshire. I'm married, and I'm just starting my career again after a number of years. I had some difficulty and where I got medically retired from my previous job. But it was only recently, the last few years since being diagnosed autistic and ADHD, that I've understood my identity a bit more, and I've decided actually I'm going to give it another shot in the illustration career, and I'm focusing on being a surface pattern designer now. I've got four stepchildren and two grandchildren, and a little cat called Monty.
All right. So when were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed autistic in 2020 on the 3rd of March.
Were you diagnosed with ADHD at the same time?
Nope, I really wish I had been. No one mentioned it, people didn't say anything. And then once I'd watched my 400 YouTube videos about autism, it became apparent that the co-occurring condition that's quite a high correlation is ADHD. So I started looking into that, and I was kind of 100% sure it was my sister, but I needed to just have clarification for me because I didn't necessarily present in a usual way. Some of the traits of ADHD, like being a night owl, things like that, I absolutely don't resonate with. So I was a bit confused, but I did actually get a diagnosis last year in June, and since that time I've been on medication, which has been absolutely life-changing.
I know what you're talking about with being a night owl, thinking that you're that with ADHD, you people say you, oh, you must be a night owl. Nope, not me. I know for a
Oh, you're
fact
not.
because about halfway through the day, it's like my mind has this alarm that says, okay, it's time for rest. Your mind, you need to recharge because otherwise, say 6-ish, 7-ish, my mind just starts to get tired and tired, and I'm just lagging for the rest of the night.
Yeah, me
So
too.
when you got diagnosed, did you eventually see the world differently? Good thing.
What happened is that I had a massive flood of self-compassion. I think I'd be spent my 43 years up to that point thinking, why can other people do this? And I just find it so hard to do whatever it was. And there was a lot of things. And I just kept pushing myself. Why can't I do that? I kept pushing and trying and pushing and trying, which led to burnout, a severe burnout, and time in a psychiatric hospital. But I think I'm not sure that I saw it in a different light. I think I saw, because I had no understanding, real understanding about what autism is. And so I had to educate myself and really understand it, hence the 400 videos on YouTube. By doing that, I had such a better idea of how it fitted with me and my experience of experiencing the world and the sensory sensitivities. I've been massively affected. I've also been invalidated and, oh, you're so sensitive. Oh, you wear your heart on your sleeve and stop being so sensitive and all of this kind of stuff. And but now I'm like, no, I've got differences and I will stand up for myself and I will, whereas before I'll be like, oh, I would shy away and there's no way I would have been on a podcast. I wouldn't have spoken very much about, you know, this or that, or my how I was feeling about something. But now I do. Now I will, and I'll stand up. And I also stand up for other autistic people, because I've joined the local council autism board, and so I'm making a difference with local regulation and support for other autistic people too.
All right. So before you got diagnosed, did you feel like you were the odd one out of everybody?
I did feel that I was very misunderstood. I'm not sure that I felt odd. I just felt that people just didn't understand what I was saying, or I was trying to explain something, but people would say, you know, with their actions that whatever you're thinking, that's not right, or you don't do that, or this isn't how it's done, or things weren't explained to me properly, like I was saying previously about the fact that I used to ask so many questions, and then my peers would be like, oh, you know, the whole eye roll thing, because I'm trying to understand something, and then I would just end up sort of shying away and not fully understanding and just being quiet. And then when you're quiet, you don't really get noticed. I think the ADHD stuff in me is, yes, my hands and my feet. I'm just playing with this thing now, but my hands and my feet do go. But it was never, I mean, I was a very active child, but now it's not so much. It was so much more in my head, and all the thoughts going in my head constantly, along with great ideas, mind you. The great ideas are always there. So yeah, I think, yeah, that's more like it.
Now, with your ADHD, do you get like running thoughts and everything? And how do you deal with that? Because everyone who knows when you have ADHD, those thoughts just keep going and they never stop.
Yeah, so I did. And then I had my first experience of the medication. I'd watched a number of videos and I thought, wow, that would be amazing if that happened to me. And I kind of thought, they're making it up. That can't be that good. And then when I took that little blue pill, it was like everything just dropped down and it was like a pond. And it was just still water in there. And I was like, I could say something in my head and grab that thought without a load of other stuff, without me having to really try to think about it. And so the medication, it still does that. And although I have lots of thoughts, I can focus on one and just bring that to the forefront now. And I don't have those screaming voices. One of the things that was really impactful because of the medication was all of the voices that I had from an eating disorder. I had bulimia a number of years ago. I was able to stop purging, but I wasn't able to stop binging. But it was more to do with what was going on in my head, the screaming thoughts, about food and things like that. And then when I took that tablet, those thoughts just disappeared. And I'm like, wow. I can just have breakfast. Okay, I'll just have breakfast. Oh, look, it's lunch. I'll go and have a sandwich then. And I sort of, it's just been astonishing to me, this medication. It really does surprise me.
I mean, I can tell you, yeah, I understand that totally. Before I was put on medicine for my ADHD, my mind was sporadic. I was all over the place. I wasn't very active in anything. And then I went through this whole clinical trial for an autism drug, and then that ended. And then I was talking to the therapist that was running it. Became friends with him and like, listen, I don't want to just be off of this medicine. I want someone to help me. He's like, Okay, we met, set up a session. He's like, okay, I'm gonna, after I told him what was wrong, I said, I need something to help me focus. Because otherwise, I'm all over the place. And he's like, I'm gonna put you on Adderall. And oh my God, it's like night and day. It's like all of a sudden, everything, when I take it, everything just narrows and I can focus on that one thing I'm working on.
I don't think for me it, yes, I can, but then I'm also still, I am still aware of the noises, the lights, and everything. The feeling of my clothes. What it does is just quiets everything. It's very hard to explain. I really struggled when they with the shortages, because it was like they gave me a gift. It felt like a gift. And then the shortages happened, and then it was suddenly taken away. And there I was, but which point I decided I'm going to start working again. And so I started up my business again. But then the medication stopped, and I couldn't think. I couldn't do the work. I couldn't do the business again. So there's a number of months. And then each month you have to go, is it going to be there? Is it not? And it's horrible. You're kind of so dependent on waiting to see if you can actually live and perform the next month. So it is
So you
horrible.
would say when you got your diagnosis and put on medicine, all of a sudden everything from your past started to make real much sense to you. It explained why you were the way you were, but yet now you know it, so now you can kind of look back and say, ah, this is why I was the way I was. This is why people looked at me differently.
Yeah, for sure. When I look back, I think as I was waiting for my assessment for autism, I was writing down things that I could say to the two people who were diagnosing me. But I decided to actually write all these things down, and it ended up being 40 pages of things that happened that I just wanted to evidence and go, look. Look here, this is something. It's just like this big chunk of stuff that I look back and I think, ah, for example, I would try to stay inside at school because I hated being outside with all the screaming and all the playing. But if I did go out or whatever, I would go out to the field, or me and my friend would just go and do some playing together. In the grasses or something, or I would just try and stay inside. I'd have any excuse, for example, can I clean out your cupboard, to the teacher, and they'd be delighted. So there I was trying to take as long as possible to clean out some cupboard so that I didn't have to go outside.
Now, when did you realize you had a talent for art?
Oh, very young. I suppose it's one of those things that I just constantly did throughout my life. And then when I was at school, I got A's in design and art, and I was just encouraged to go to college and do art. And so I did, and I did a general national vocation qualification in general art and design at Amersham College. And from there, I went to Norwich, which was a lovely city to study in. And I studied an HND, and then I went on to a degree and did illustration and graphic design. And then from there, I actually struggled to get a job. It was very difficult for me to actually understand how to get a job. It wasn't that I couldn't get a job. I ended up getting a job at the supermarket, but I couldn't get one in the career that I wanted. I didn't, nobody sort of explained that side of stuff to me at university. As I mentioned before about the classroom that had all the computers in, it We were learning about Adobe and Illustrator and Photoshop. I found it overwhelming with all the lights and all the people talking constantly, and I got so far behind, I just gave up the class and I didn't learn. And then when I went out into the workplace, they wanted those computer skills and I didn't have them. And so I decided to go to Israel and do housekeeping for a year out in Israel. Israel was a special interest of mine, in Judaism. And so I went out there, and but when I came back, that's when I went to the supermarket, and I was on the checkouts for a while before moving to London. And I transferred to Golders Green, which is a very Jewish populated area in London, because I thought maybe I'll find a graphics job around there somewhere, but it didn't really work out. I then met my husband, who I'm still married to, and he encouraged me to join the police because he was a police officer. So I joined the police thinking, well, I can't get a graphics job. Maybe this way I can at least get some money. Maybe I'll be good at it. I don't know. Enjoyed learning all about the laws, all the studying about all the different rules and regulations. But then when I had to get out onto the streets and start putting it into practice and meeting people and arresting people, I hated it and I wasn't very good at it. And I ended up really burning out. And I then ended up getting medically retired because I developed chronic pain. I've actually got hypermobility Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder. And that was went undiagnosed as well. And I finally got diagnosed at 30, which is when I got medically retired.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that. So you have HEAD. How do you deal with that while doing your art?
I think it's just a matter of pacing activities and then dealing with things that come up. It is a syndrome and it looks different in everyone. Very much like autism, seems different in different people, where people experience it differently. I get a lot of orthostatic intolerance, so I find it very hard to just stand still and upright. I have difficulty with the walking. I use a stick a lot of the time for balance and also just to lean on for pain. I adapt things. So I've got an ergonomic chair, ergonomic mouse, various things in the kitchen, for example, like ergonomic things that help me. Pots and pans with handles, so it's not all with one wrist. There's loads of adaptions and things that help me. And then when the inevitable subluxations happen, it's just a matter of management and physio to build up again. But it affects all the tissues in your body. So people who have EDS are more prone to migraines and headaches, and as well as people who are neurodivergent. So those sorts of things, tummy issues, TMJ, I get pain here quite a lot. There's all sorts of things, feet issues. I've got arches, but when I stand, it goes completely flat because I've got no strength in my muscle tone there. So, and I've got deterioration in the middle of my back since about 24. So, it does affect me. I've had a lot of therapy over the years, and I think focusing on things that make you happy and give you joy is the main thing to get over those more difficult things.
All right. Now let's go back to your autism for a bit. Do you have any sensory issues at all?
Yeah. So the hearing thing is I've definitely got a sensitivity to noise. Even just going out of the house, I find hard. Sitting in the car, like driving in the car, or sitting in the car with my husband driving, he puts down the windows slightly, and I just like it. It's just too much sometimes. If and then it's almost like a bucket sometimes. If I'm stressed already with something else, then that's e becomes even worse. So maybe I could tolerate it on a better day a bit better. But yeah, it's definitely feels like a bucket thing for me. I've also got hyperacusis, which means I hear really high sounds. So I do hear like the electricity and things. The lighting really affects me, especially strip lights, really bright strip lights in what seem to be like council buildings or government buildings, like the doctors and things. I find that I can't wear anything around my wrists, or I haven't got my wedding ring on. As soon as I got my diagnosis, wedding ring was off. It gave me the freedom to say, do you know what? I can't tolerate it because it be I can feel it all day on me, like my clothes are just like screaming at me, that I'm wearing them, and it's hard. I've also got something called phantosmia, which is hallucination of a cigarette smell. Every now and again, it will come along. For example, if I see somebody smoking on a screen on TV, I can smell
Oh my God,
it.
that's so
Just,
funny. I think I have
it's
that too.
fascinating, but it. Oh, do
Yeah, I
you?
mean, I'll
That's.
smell. It'll be kind of funny. I will be in bed, and all of a sudden, I'll smell like, I don't know if somebody's walking by the street, but I'll smell like the smell of pot. And I know it's or a skunk, and we don't really have skunks out here much. And this is where we're at in the city, and it'll be just like this strong smell, and it'll just come and then it'll go away. Or I'm watching TV, and like you said, somebody's smoking, and all of a sudden, I'll start to smell like cigarette smoke. And I'm like, why am I smelling this? And I couldn't figure out why.
So yeah, I got that. And with places like the department store that will have loads of perfume in, I make sure that I do a massive void around that area. Or even in the shopping mall, and on one side there's like this shop called Lush. I don't know if you've got it out there, but it's just all like smelly things with bath bombs and this, that, and the other. I have to go right round the other side because it just wafts near me. Or if someone sits near me and they're wearing a perfume, I can end up gagging. It just can be overwhelming. Yeah, so smells. Taste. I am very sensitive to taste, but also I really like strong sour stuff. So, and spicy stuff. So it's kind of like a craving for some of that. And I think I probably see things brighter because I don't know. I mean, there's no way of telling, is there, if someone sees something differently, I don't think. But I'll say to my husband, oh my goodness, look at all those greens. I'm looking out into the forest or something, or the gardens, and it's just so beautiful. All these different greens. And he's like, yes, it's trees. What? And I'm just like, look at it, it's amazing, the colours. And I don't know, maybe I do. I wonder if I do because I'm so sensitive in so many other, areas. So, and then the whole sensitivity to emotions can send me right up and right down. So I experience them, and very quickly, I'm learning all about that
Now,
and how to help myself.
you said that Judaism is one of your interests. How did that become an interest? I mean, that's very unusual.
So I grew up in a Christian home. My parents are still Christians. And I remember I was 12 or 13 and I was looking through a book and there was a big family of people all sitting around having a Shabbat meal and we were learning about Judaism. And I just thought that was such a beautiful picture. I remember it. I've got a very good visual memory and it's a blessing and a curse. But that is a particularly wonderful memory that I have of that picture. And it just looked so picture perfect of a family. And it just got me interested. And so then I would read the Bible and read the Old Testament that was called. And I just kept reading it. I am dyslexic. It took a while. I eventually got it on audiobook, and so I'd listen to it on audiobook as well, and it just fascinated me, and I was determined to go to Israel to see exactly what it was like out there and to experience it for myself. And then an opportunity came up while I was at university to do a student exchange. It was actually a student exchange to Greece. But I didn't like it there so much, and I took it upon myself to just go to Israel instead. I was nearly kicked off my course, because they wouldn't authorize it. I certainly wasn't insured, and but because I'd kept doing all my artwork, I came back with loads of artwork for them, and they said it's the most artwork anyone's ever come back from an exchange. So they were actually pleased in the end. But it was wonderful to go there and to travel around. I went with a friend called Winnie at the time, and we would go along and go and visit all these different places, and it was just fascinating to me. I ended up trying to learn Hebrew. I can kind of read it, but it was much more to do with I wanted to understand. If the Bible is written in Hebrew, then that's God's word. And then I wanted to know exactly what he was saying instead of a translation from English. That was why I learned it. It wasn't to converse with Israelis. But yeah, I don't actually believe in God anymore, but thoroughly enjoy the culture. I still have a Christmas tree every year as well.
Now, would you say your artwork would be your hyper focus?
Yes, my artwork and my craft and my new paper business, for sure.
Now, how did you get into doing surface art? And what is surface art for those who don't know?
So I have been on a bit of a journey with that. So once I was medically retired, I actually decided that I would start my own greeting card company. And we would get, I was determined to get my cards into John Lewis, which is a department store here in England, in Oxford Street in London. And I did it within about a year, and I was so delighted. And that is one form of surface pattern. You can do any kind of design, and if it goes onto something like fabrics, cushions, notebooks, phone cases, those kinds of things, anything that's got a surface, it's called a surface pattern. From what I understood, it was illustration, and it was really only recently that I understood the difference between a surface pattern designer and an illustrator. And so I think that's another reason why I'd gotten a bit confused with what I was trying to do, because I find drawing people very difficult. And especially the emotions. I actually really enjoy drawing animals. Most of my animals just end up looking a bit shocked, though. But that's it. Like I've got a squirrel going, yeah. But that's where I'm at. That's where I'm learning. I'm getting to understand Adobe Illustrator and Photoshop even though I have tried to piece it together myself over the years, I think now I need some proper one-to-one help, which I'm getting. I'm getting some help from a web designer, and she's doing my website. So that will be coming in the next month. And then I'll be able to show my patterns. And it's basically that you do these patterns, and then you go out and you license them to companies who might use them on their products. And it's as simple as that, really. So I say. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting stuck in and doing much more of it.
All right. Now, what made you decide to start an Etsy shop?
I have had a love for paper for many, many years, since I was about 16. There's a shop called Paper Chase on Tottenham Court Road in London. And I would go there and I would just go and look and feel all the papers. And it was just a joy to go and just spend time in this gorgeous shop. Unfortunately, it did go into administration last year. I think it was last year. And it was just so sad. And I joined a group, a neurodivergent coaching group. And they one of the ladies was talking about her handmade and specialty paper company, and she was getting a bit bored with it, but she said it was doing quite well on Etsy. And I said, oh, I'll have a look at that. And I didn't end up buying it from her, because you can't actually buy somebody else's Etsy shop. You have to start a new shop with a new name. So it wasn't like I could buy her customers over, or any kind of email list or anything like that. So I ended up thinking, well, she's shutting up shop, I'm going to open mine. And that's how it got started, really.
Now, let's talk about one of the things that you've done, and that is you recently just shared your life in a book. What was that
Yes.
like?
It was very challenging to write, being dyslexic. I found it really hard to get my thoughts out onto paper and then to rearrange them and have some kind of structure. I did actually ask my husband for some help, and also another friend called Samantha, and she really helped me as well, put my words into some kind of cohesive structure. But it was wonderful, because there's 30 other women who are neurodivergent and creative, who have all come together, and we've now got this book that's it's all our stories and things that we may have overcome, things that have been challenging. And I think it's a wonderful read, listening to how similar, or there's always a golden thread throughout about these creative women who've been misunderstood. And I think it's really important that it's gotten out there, that people are not alone, and that there are things that challenge us, but there are also great stories and stories of people overcoming things and making the best of things and achieving, being successful.
Now, what does it mean to you that there are people from all over the world reading this book who are literally relating, who can really relate to your story and feel the same as you are feeling?
I think it's one of those things that is just hard to comprehend that that's happening. But I really hope that those people, especially if they're in a struggle or if they're in a difficult situation, that it will give them hope that things can turn around, that even in the darkest places, and there's quite a bit of darkness in that book from a lot of women, that things can get better, and that there are other answers.
Now, what advice do you have for those dealing with the same issues you're going through, who are just realizing they're neurodivergent, women or men? What advice do you have for them?
Give yourself permission to just be and have time and space to really think about your past and to give yourself compassion for not meeting the standards or the social standards that everyone expects of you, or the pressure that people put on you to do something in a certain way or something like that. And then own it, own your own identity. Learn about autism, learn about how it affects you and how great it is, but also the challenges that it brings, and learn to embrace it all, and definitely check out whether or not you're ADHD, because you might be.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and your Etsy shop and learn more about you?
I have got a folio on the Association of Illustrators, Joe Phillips. And also, you can find me at Paperly UK on Etsy. And I'm on Instagram as Joe Phillips Designs and Facebook as Joe Phillips Designs. And it's not long before I have my website, which will be infinitydesigner.co.uk.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Joe Phillips. And I'll see you in the next one. See you there. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.